This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Wow. People have been calling me the last of the red hot book lovers, and I can tell you I do love books, and it's so exciting. I have a big schedule coming up in 2024, but I'm starting here the month of December with a really fascinating book, and I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper an acclaimed television writer and director and producer, and my goodness, she's a filmmaker and she does everything else, and it's such an honor to welcome you to the program, Joan Meyerson. Hi.
Well, hello, Susie. It's so nice to hear your voice on my own telephone, you know, not as opposed to watching the shows that you've been doing in the past. And I just want to say I appreciate so much your show. You really opened the door to so many writers and there's so many different stories to tell. And as you say, it's the story, the people behind the story, too, that's so important. And I know certainly for my book, it was really the foundation of my novel.
It is, and you know, it's so much fun for me. When I was very young, I decided that I was going to one day live in England, near where Jane Austen was born, and I did. When I was 21, I bought a 400-year-old cottage there. But I did spend a lot of weekends in Paris. It was sort of my base of operations, actually, for running around Europe. So I'm so excited to talk to you about your years in Paris.
Oh yes, well thank you. So they were momentous. They were the two different times that I lived in Paris. Well, the first, like you, when you were 21, I was 21, graduated from college. I went to Berkeley. I decided I would not go to Europe until I graduated, until I was 21, because then I was a free person. I didn't have to listen to my parents. I could do what I wanted to do, which sometimes wasn't always the best thing, you know, but it's how we learn about our lives, right? And so I did that, and it was a momentous experience. But, you know, a lot of things happened, and I ended up coming back to L.A. and didn't go back for a long time. As in my novel, the novel is certainly it's inspired by the two times I lived in Paris. It's not actually completely exactly what happened to me, but, you know, sometimes when you're creating the story, you have to change a little bit. But then when I went back in the 70s, things were very different. I don't know if you were around there during that time, too, but everything was bright and clean and open and free.
The 70s were the most wonderful time in Paris, I think.
Yes. Well, they're still pretty good now. I just find myself going back every year if I can. But I do love it, and it did inspire me to write it. And as you say, my background, this is my first novel, but I had a pretty long and good career as in documentaries and other kinds of programs, too. But I always felt I learned from those things, especially I was the writer of in a lot of PBS shows and the National Memorial Day concert, in which I interviewed a lot of vets and widows and children who lost their parents. And I found that the most interesting stories are really from real life. And so when I decided I loved writing other people's stories, but it was finally time to write something that's inspired by my own life. And I realized that that's, you know, really what I had to do. And I think there were personal reasons, too, probably, why I wanted to do it.
Well, I think it was a great decision on your part, because you are a natural writer. And it's wonderful, you know, that finally, you know, I'm always encouraging people, write your book. There's a book in you.
Yes.
And so it's exciting, you know, when somebody actually does it.
I know. Well, I never thought about doing it until, you know, finally I got to the age where I actually financially could afford to do it, too, because you don't always have, you know, you don't know until you publish a book whether or not, you know, the financial part's going to be there. But it becomes a need inside you, I think, to share your life or to share those things that have happened to you with other people. I wanted to do, as they say, there's, you know, an expression, a good story well told. But I wanted to write something that I wanted to read, you know, a good story. I used to call it a smart woman's beach read, you know, somebody where there's a lot of fun and a lot of adventure to it and a lot of excitement and great characters. But also there was some social relevance, some meaning to it, some depth to the story. And so that's what I ended up doing, you know.
And you've accomplished it with your story about Kate. I will say that.
Yes.
Now, I was in Hollywood for a while. I wrote, I had three of my, yes, my spec scripts were optioned. And so I loved the part where you're writing about Paris, of course, relate very much to me, but also the parts about Hollywood. So I found it, I got a kick out of it, I can tell you.
That was a fun part, writing about, as a documentary filmmaker, she gets a job to go back to Paris, and finally she has to decide she has to confront the past.
Here, lay the foundation about who Kate is and what she's going to do.
You want me to write them? Well, see, yes. Well, basically, everybody wants to go to Paris except for Kate. Kate has avoided Paris like the plague for the last 13 years. She was there in the 60s. She ended up, she loved it. It was beautiful. It was perfect until it wasn't, until she had a love affair that did not turn out well and sort of disastrous, and she never wanted to go back. But then she's kind of shut down because she can't forget those memories of what happened to her. And she's working for a freelance for a French producer, and he hires her to come and help him work on the Deauville Film Festival, which is like the mini version of Cannes Film Festival. And she decides, finally, her life's going nowhere. She better confront it. Something in her says, maybe going back to Paris will help me get rid of the past, help me reconcile myself with the past. And so she does, and she's still worried about going. But, I mean, as soon as you get to Paris, you step off the metro, and there's the Eiffel Tower, and there's these beautiful buildings, and the Seine River, and all the French people wandering around and dressed very nicely. And you just get caught up in the beauty of Paris again, and you realize you have to stay there. And
to experience it is, and as we did sort of back in the days, I was, you know, as I said, I was in the 70s, the later 70s. Mm-hmm. And that feeling, from the minute you step off the plane and you know you're there, and then when you get there, and later on, I stayed in a lot of different places in Paris. You know, when I was young, I stayed in pensions and inexpensive hotels. And then as I made more money, and then I got married, my husband and I always made Hotel Regina our base. That was my favorite. Nice.
Where was that, on the left bank or the right bank?
By the news.
It sounds familiar.
Yes. Well, it's the one where Joan of Arc is standing in front of it.
Oh, yes. No, I do know. We walked past that a lot. For my book, my publisher asked me, we were just getting the proof book out, and I was going back to France anyway before I even knew I was going to publish this book. And she said, take a camera and go to all the places that are in the book, and take a picture of you holding the book in front of that. And we will walk back and forth by the statue of Joan of Arc all the time, because there was a lot of places around there where I had been when I was younger, you know. And so I got to take pictures of it. It was the most fun trip I had to Paris.
that was our favorite hotel. Although as we had money, we went to all the other hotels too. I know one of my favorite was the Hotel Maurice. Lord Peter Wimsey in the Dorothy Sayers books always stayed.
Yes, that's a beautiful hotel. Well, in the novel, of course, she goes there when she's 21 and doesn't have a lot of money. And she finally, and she's left alone. She's gone with a friend, and the friend abandons her to search for a better life for herself, and in Hollywood, of course. And so she's left on her own, and she doesn't know what to do. She's almost goes home, but she finds the Sorbonne, the university. She can take classes, and she gets a job as an au pair. And she thinks, oh, this is going to be great. I'm going to live with a French family, and we're going to do all these things. And she ends up, you know, being in the maid's room, which is like a closet, as you know. And that's where she starts out when she's 21. But then when she comes back in 1977, things are a little different. And she ends up meeting a lot of influential people and French, famous French producers. And as you say, she interviews at the Deauville Film Festival. She interviews Hollywood celebrities like Gregory Peck, and she starts getting different ideas of how she could live her life. And it's really quite fun to see how she reinvents herself, you know, in a sense, and regains the confidence that she, you know, that she used to have. And we see how she, you know, what she will do with that. But I don't want to.
No, don't. Yeah, don't get it all away. But I was happy that you picked Deauville, because that is, I think that's the loveliest film festival. I enjoyed that one the most of all the film festivals I've ever been to. I love that.
Really? No. Well, I think because it was just beginning when I went, and it was small, but it was easy to walk around and meet people. And actually, I went there. That's why I chose it, because as I say, the best stories come from real life. I could have chose Cannes, but you know, everybody knows about Cannes. And but if you don't have the personal experience, you're not going to really write a fun book. But having had that personal experience, having been invited by a film critic to go up to the festival and be with him when we did it, that you can write about it, and it's real, but it's also fun, and you can also take some liberties with what goes on there too. But it's all based on something that you can believe that might have happened.
Well, you know, for me, Paris is a walking city, and I walked all over Paris.
Oh, yes.
And because I think of my knowledge of books and my, you know, the number of books I had already read before I ever even went to Europe, I found myself always, I could walk anywhere in Paris and find anything.
Yes. Yes, yes. Oh, I mean, it's just, I'm so glad that you've had the same feelings as I do, and you probably felt that when you were reading the book, because there's something magical about it. I don't know what it is. And if you've been to Paris, I mean, people have told me this, if you've been to Paris, this book will take you back there. You can enjoy it. But if you haven't been to Paris, then you can feel like you know, really having your own fantasy trip there and get a feeling for it. And as I said, I wanted to make this, at first I thought it would be a smart woman's beach read, but now that we're almost to Christmas, I think it'd be a wonderful book to curl up by the fire and go to Paris while you have some time off to enjoy the holiday.
Yes, a vicarious experience, because it's something I do wish people would be able to, you know, have that feeling, because it never leaves you. You know, I've traveled all over the world since my first trip to Paris, but I never forget that feeling. And it was something, and I never had, you know, you hear these stories, oh, they're unfriendly and stuff. I never had that.
No.
Everybody in Paris was so good to me from the day one. Yeah, you know, I stayed in, like, when I first was there, I stayed in, you know, these very, very cheap pensions and very inexpensive hotels. And everybody there was so kind to me. And then later on, as I, you know, got more experience in Paris, but it didn't matter. Nobody was ever rude to me in Paris. People have been rude to me in all countries, all over the world, but never in Paris.
I know. I always wonder, why do people say they don't like it? Because I don't know why, but because I always have felt that the French have a certain way dealing with things. And I know that when I was living there back in the 70s in a nice apartment, you know, in the nice area of Paris, finally, because I could afford that too, if you had a problem with your heater or, you know, your television work or whatever, you call a technician, and sometimes they could be really a little abrupt. But that was, you know, that's part of the charm of the French, too, you know.
And you feel a little bit intimidated by the way the women dress, because no matter how you try, you're always going to look in there. They just have something special about them.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, it reminds me of Emily in Paris. A lot of people love that show, too. But it's really a fantasy if you watch that. I mean, if you watch it, she comes in every scene. She's in a different designer dress. And I don't think many Parisian people are really like that. But it's fun to watch. But I think my Kate, I often daydream because I do know the executive producer of Emily in Paris. And she read the book, too, and she loved the book, which is very nice. But I have this fantasy of my Kate somehow bumping into Emily in Paris and having a great time together.
Well, the French women, they can wear old clothes. Their clothes can be 30 years old, and they still look good in them, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes I find myself just taking pictures of people walking down the street because they look so stylish, you know, so Parisian in a certain way. You know?
Yeah. And then, of course, you go to the restaurants and, oh.
The restaurants, yes. I know. Well, so my hair, yeah, but the Kate, when she's young, of course, as you say, when you're young, it's a little different, you know. I ate at the student cafeteria, which wasn't too great, but then it's nice to have both experiences. When you're young, I think even living in a maid's room in a closet becomes romantic, because this is what, you know, this is what Hemingway did when he first came. This is what Picasso did when he first came, you know, living in the garrets of Paris. And so you get that feeling, you have a whole different kind of a feeling for Paris when you're young, and then when you're older, that's that whole other feeling of Paris, because you can enjoy.
Yeah, F. Scott Fitzgerald's footsteps, and you're walking with Zelda,
right.
And you're seeing things in a different light, and you're having so much fun. As you get older, then, you know, for me, I love military history. I love anything Napoleonic.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, yeah, I'm in glory in Paris.
Yes, my husband would always go to see Napoleon's tomb. He loved that. But anyway, well, I'm so happy that you've had similar experiences to me, so you could really understand the book. And I think you've hit the nail on the head, as they say, about how you would feel when you read my book. I mean, that's what I strove for, and I'm glad to hear that it brought out those memories in you, because it is a special place, and it's fun. It's fun to read about it, I think.
It is. It's wonderful, and I'm sure it's so much fun when I hear the story behind the book of how somebody has, I mean, you've been holding all of these ideas in your head and, you know, it's sort of fermenting in there, and then it just starts bubbling out. And isn't it exciting?
Yes. Oh, yes, it was. I mean, because at first I wasn't sure. I had these two time periods. I said, which story will I tell? But neither one by itself kind of meant, you know, what didn't feel complete. And all of a sudden I realized, you know, it's not complete, because so much happened in the 60s that affected her in the 70s that she had to confront. And so that's what made the story so interesting, is because she had to go back and forth in time and sort of unpeel the onion until you get to the core of the story, as you go back and forth in time. And that's what makes it right. And that's what I felt like I needed to do, because some of it, you know, I think all authors feel the same way, because it's not only telling your story, but sometimes there's a story that you have to, write down, that you need to send out to the world, that you need to say, that helps you resolve some of the own conflicts in your own personal life. You know, some of the things I made them, you know, turn out the way I wanted them to turn out.
That's the nice thing about being a writer. You can do it. It's like, it's sort of like, you know, when Lee Child was fired from his job and he decided to write a book, he used some of the people from the board of directors that fired him. He used them as the people to bash heads with in his book. So you can do all sorts of fun things when you're the writer.
Oh, yes. It's very satisfying because you can change. You can change what happened, you know, let's say something horrible happened to you and that's what you've been living with for a long time, but you have to go back. Maybe it's based on that incident, but you can turn it to your own advantage, and it's sometimes the best therapy you've ever had. In fact, right before it's published, I let a good friend of mine read the book, and that's what she felt like too. I mean, she said, you know, you're reading your book was better therapy than going to a therapist, you know. So sometimes it does help to, you know, you start with reality and
well, you have the germ of the idea, and then you just let it blossom and grow and go wherever it wants.
Exactly. And that's writing is so great that way, I think. And you've really, I think you really help when you're talking to writers like me, you really help bring that out and make understand why it's important.
Well, I mean, I do feel that everybody has one book in them, but I have a feeling you have more books in you because you can write like crazy about Hollywood. And yes. I can tell you, I'm sure you have a lot of stories that you can turn into fascinating novels.
Oh yeah. Well, I know. I'm going to get there. Right now it's working on, you know, I want to get it out to the world because I think there's a lot of women out there, I think, that would really love this book. And men, too. I mean, I understand I just had my book launch a week or so ago, and some of my friends came, and all the women bought books, and then they found out that some of their husbands on their own were buying their own book, too, because I must confess, and you probably know this now, there's a little bit of sexiness to this novel.
Yes, there is.
And they were buying it, too.
So, yes, definitely a little bit of adult writing in there, but it's fascinating. And as I said, it opens you up to doing a lot of Hollywood books, which is fun for you. Now, I myself am working on a Hollywood book. I've been working on it I'm glad you used the word therapy. Mine is sort of therapy. I don't think I can finish this book because I was in Hollywood and I was very young, and I made the mistake of suing one of the major studios. That was not a good idea. That's why I'm on the west coast of Florida instead of the west coast of California, because I'm sort of killing off all the lawyers involved in the lawsuit. So it's therapeutic.
I bet that's fun to write about.
It is.
Now.
It is. I pick it up every once in a while, and I remember who was wearing, you know, the $3,000 suit, Italian suit, and who was wearing it. And so I write about it, and then I think, well, these people are still alive. I better not publish it. Yeah. Who knows? They can still come after me.
Well, I must say, some of my characters are exactly like what you're doing. I have had some friends who went Hollywood on me. I was very close to them. And then two women I know ended up winning Oscars. And immediately, you know, I was frozen out of their world, you know.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I use that. And you can understand that, I'm sure. And,
oh, I do.
So
I
use that. Help me.
And that's why I was always so grateful to Debbie Reynolds, because she didn't turn her back on me. I wrote a film for her that unfortunately it went into turnaround because of the big financial collapse in 2008. But she was one of the ones who didn't turn on, away from me. So I was always, but Hollywood is like that, which is, I mean, that's what makes for a fun book. So I have a feeling, I don't know if you started working on the second book or you're going to wait until after you do the marketing for this one.
No. Well, I think about it. It is certainly going to incorporate Hollywood figures, but it's going to be in a different way, and it's going to be kind of a fun book. But it's going to be it's going to be about my neighborhood in Los Angeles.
That's good. Everybody in Hollywood will buy the book to see if you've included them, and it will become a bestseller.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. Maybe my second bestseller. I hope.
Now that you've got the book launched, what are you doing marketing wise? There are more possibilities now. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
There's no more pandemic.
Well, I'm so glad it didn't happen during the pandemic. I had a friend who did have a book published during the pandemic. It was like a death, to do that. But posting a lot of things on Facebook, like I said, pictures of me in Paris, but that are in scenes that are actually in the novel and you can see the location of those scenes. So that helps. That helps people visualize what the book might be like, and talking to people like you. I mean, I'm hoping that will help get it. Get the word out, because as I said, the beginning, it's a lot of fun. It's humorous. Clever. Kate is a clever person on the outside and on the inside. She's vulnerable just like all of us. And I think some of those things that people will read, that some of these characters that our readers will enjoy reading about and be helpful to them. So I wanted the book that was fun, but also has some significance to it too. And that's the kind of book that I'd like to write again. But it's going to be about my neighborhood. A neighborhood where I found out after I moved here that a lot of famous Hollywood people lived in, and they're gone now. But in my book, they might not be gone.
Yeah, bring them back. Why not? This is that's the fun thing. That's what you can do.
That's right. So I think that's what's going to be my next project. But there's so many things to write about, It's the process. As you say at the beginning of your show, it's the people who write and who want to write. And there's just something in a lot of us that makes us feel like we need to write. And I think I always did a little bit. And even in documentaries, of course, I wrote, I had to write some narration. I interviewed people. I did all those things. And that's where I learned that, finding the real story is what is the basis for all good books anyway. So that's what I'll keep doing, I think.
Well, I think you've done that, and certainly it's going to be fun. What you will discover is as you get fans, as people write to you and say, I really enjoyed that book, and it will empower you really in many ways to keep going and do more. And I think you're going to have lots of fun with this book. And as one of the things, really, when you get to meet people and when you get to sign the books yourself for people, I think that's an exciting moment in your life.
It was. It was the most exciting. I had never had experience that before. It was the most exciting. I could not believe it. I felt like I was in a dream, a dream come true. And so I hope to continue that. It was certainly inspiration to keep on going. So,
I asked Omar Sharif one time. I was on location for filming, and I asked him. I said, "Do you ever get tired of all the women and come up to you and want your autograph?" And in those days they didn't do selfies. If somebody had a camera, they would ask for a picture. And he said to me, "Never." Never.
Never. No, I know.
It was so funny. So because
I have to share. Yeah, I have to share with you, Susie, because I guess it's exactly what happened to me years ago. I did some little thing for Richard Harris. You remember the actor? And he wanted some help with it, and he flew me to New York, and I was in the limo with him. He was doing a concert. He started to he was not only an actor, but he was a singer. And there were all these young people crowding his limousine, trying to get to him. And I couldn't believe it. I thought it was just kind of funny. But he was serious about it. He was loving it. It was like it was his air to him that he needed to keep breathing. You know, I had to have these fans around. It was very serious. So I understand completely why Omar would have said that to you.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things I'm shopping around a spec script that I wrote about my own childhood. You know, my name is Patsy with a Z, P-A-T-Z-I.
Yes, that's it.
And so Jimmy Hoffa gave me that name.
Oh, wow.
And so I wrote a movie about when I was a little girl and I used to sit on Jimmy Hoffa's lap. And so I'm shopping that one around Hollywood. I hope someday to get somebody to pick it up. And I'm sure you're going to try to shop around your book.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so. Some people have already said, this should be a movie. So I'm saying, yeah, sure, let's do it. I hope so. I'm ready for it.
Well, I mean, people will say that. And the thing is, some will make it. And you never know. And the wonderful thing about writing is that, you know, you live in this sort of bubble when you're writing, but then when you come out and you start realizing the impact that your words can make, it's very exciting. And so this, your book, Who Needs Paris, a great title, by the way, and the I love the cover. I thought the cover of Who Needs Paris is really very clever.
It captures
not just a feeling, but also the period.
Yeah, well, that's I had that vision, and I just, you know, I just felt like that's what it was. And when I saw it on the cover, I thought, oh, I'm so glad. Yeah,
yeah, it captures that that late 60s, 70s vibe.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Well, thank you for saying that. I really appreciate it. I love it too. But yeah, I had that. I think it's good because it's so, you have to, I mean, there's so many books on Paris. You think, how can you write another one? Yeah, it's different. And every book on Paris usually has a picture of the Eiffel Tower on it. And I thought, well, how can I do this with make it different too? And as my story is, you know, it's about Paris, but it's different from any other story about Paris, I hope. And that's what I wanted the cover to be too, that you would know exactly that we're talking about Paris, but there's a little bit of a humor to it too, you know.
The humor and the time period, because it is so 60s.
Right.
It is really just a perfect cover for your book about, you know, a really interesting, when she starts off a very innocent young woman, Kate Miller, and her first trip to Paris, and then 10 years later. So you've done a great job with the cover, with the book, and now you're going to have fun with marketing, and then you'll be back here in about a year with your second book. Am I correct?
Oh, I hope so. I hope so.
Okay, well, you remember, you know,
we have a date.
That's it,
Absolutely. If you come back to Hollywood, we'll go have a drink at the Beverly Hills Hotel, okay?
Oh, I love it. One of my favorite places. I love it. Okay, well, you have a website, very nice website, by the way, because you have pictures of Paris. So tell me about it.
Yes. Oh yes. Oh, thank you. I did. It was fun to do. And so, well, thank you.
And it's just your name, Joan Meyerson, right?
Joan Meyerson. That's it. That's my name.
Okay.
Yeah, with an E. Everybody always thinks. Well, it's my husband's name, you know, right, which I took. But everybody thinks he's related to Bess Meyerson, you know, who was Miss America. But R. Meyerson is with an E, M-E-Y.
M-E-Y-E-R-S-O-N. And it's a wonderful website. If you want to see some pictures of Paris and get some more information about the story behind Who Needs Paris. And I can just tell you, just about everybody in the world needs Paris.
Yes, I think you're right. Well, it was a pleasure talking to you, and thank you again. And you really help out and inspire a lot of writers. So I'm thrilled to have been a part of that. And
well, it's been a joy to talk to you. And as I said, you're going to be back. All right?
Okay.
Thank you now. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye, Joan.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Okay. Wow. Oh, it always makes me happy to think about my years in Paris. And, wow. And now, it's so hard to believe that it's December already. And we're going to have a book buzz from Devon Miller. And this is a wonderful book buzz that he did for Kevin B. Edwards. And later on in the program, I'm going to play Kevin's wonderful song that he sent me a couple years ago. And I'm going to be playing that. But I want to play the book buzz and some commercials, and then I'll come back and I want to talk more about Kevin B. Myers, and I also want to talk about Jim Lamb. So let's head into a book buzz.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Tock Lock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. The holidays are coming up, and that means you might hear some Christmas carolers outside your window. Maybe you might even hear Kevin from the book Kevin Turns Fear into Feet, because Kevin is a great singer. Before Kevin had the courage to sing for a big crowd, it took him a while to conquer his fear. Written by Kevin B. Edwards and illustrated by George Franco, Kevin Turns Fear into Feet tells the story of Kevin, who's a bit scared to sing in a school program because his teacher asked him to. With a story similar to the character of Kevin in the book, the author was inspired to write the book after a teacher brought a third grade student to him who sings. The author's first impression was that she lacked confidence and self-esteem. Due to the author meeting the student, he wrote the book to honor her. Overcoming his own fear, Kevin B. Edwards is now an international gospel singer. This book serves as a great help for kids to overcome their fears and insecurities. When reading Kevin Turns Fear into Feet, I think kids will turn their own fears into feet. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. And welcome back to Joy on Paper, and I am so happy that I have this opportunity to talk a little bit about several things. First of all, I want to apologize if you've looked at my website. I had an author scheduled to come on today, Severin Ashkenazi, and his book is called Swords of the Vatican, Reflections of a Witness to Evil. Now, at this time of the world problems that we're having and the terrible problems that we're having, I think that Severin Ashkenazi's book, Swords of the Vatican, is one that you should read. because he tackles the subject of evil and where it comes from, where it springs from, and all of the disinformation that is out there and all of the horrible things that are going on. And he is a Holocaust survivor, so he weaves in his own personal knowledge as a survivor. And he's done a beautifully researched book. And it does start with this idea that people have not heard the whole story or don't understand it or have forgotten it or haven't even been told the story. So I would love for all of you to get this book. It's called Swords of the Vatican, Reflections of a Witness to Evil. It is a book that if you read it, you will say to yourself, I wish I had known this. I wish I had thought about this. And I hope that you will get it. And it's available, of course, online. And it's by Severin Ashkenazi, Swords of the Vatican. So that's one book that I want to tell you that you should buy. But another book, and this is a book that is really so much fun for me, and this is Jim Lamb's Herding Butterflies. I was so thrilled. Jim Lamb has dedicated this book to all of the listeners of Joy on Paper, and I want to thank him for that. Jim Lamb has been a great friend of Joy on Paper for these 9 years that I've been doing this. It's been really wonderful to work with him, and he's such a warm and generous person. His poems are delightful. This is an eclectic assortment of poems. Some are serious, some are funny, some are reflective, and some are just sort of just words that have come together in just the right way. And that's the excitement of poetry. If you have not read poetry, this is a great book to start, because it will inspire you perhaps to write poetry. Because what you learn from poets, and this is for all of you writers out there, and particularly for all of you ones who participated in NaNoWriMo during November, and you write and you think, well, how do I use a word? What word should I use? Reading poetry is one of the best things that you can do if you are a writer. If you want to understand that you can tell a story, a complicated, beautiful story in, you know, a few dozen words, you can do it in a poem. And when you see that it can be done, then you know there's an excitement that grows in you. You can say, wow, how did that poet take these few words, you know, 20 words, 30 words, 40 words, and create an entire story in your mind? And that's the great talent that Jim Lamb has. I love the way he uses words. And also the wonderful thing about this book is it includes many of his artworks. He is very talented. He loves to draw. He loves to express himself. And this is, you know, what everybody needs to do. You have to give yourself a chance to show who you are. And when I say, you know, this is a story, this is a program where I want to encourage people to write, it's because I know that if you do it, you you're amazed at yourself. You say, I did that. Now, you don't always have to write a novel. You can write all sorts of books. You can write a kid's book, you can write a cookbook, you can write a travel book, you can write anything, but there is a book in you, and I'm sure that, you know, you can write. It's just a matter of practice. It's like, you know, writing is an art, but it is also a craft, and you learn by doing. Now, all of you, I'm sure, have watched Leroy Jethro Gibbs build a boat in his basement, and you see how he works on it. Slowly over time, and as you watch him sand that beautiful wood that he's working on, and you say to yourself, when is he going to finish this boat? Well, you know he's going to finish it when it's just right. And that's the joy of learning a craft. And writing is a craft, and you can learn it. You have to start, though. So I want you to start writing. And here's a little literary gem that Jim Lamb has recorded for us. It's about one of the elements of writing. So let's play that. It's a Jim Lamb literary number four. We'll play number four of his literary gems because it's a great one. And I love to hear how he explains very easily for you to understand how to write, improve your writing and craft. Okay, and we'll get it in a minute. Going to be Big Ed in the control room is going to find it for me because I want to play this one. And I play them every once in a while because when you're a writer, you have to learn the elements of writing. And whether it's metaphors or similes or whatever, there's a craft. It's just like Leroy Jethro Gibbs learns his tools and which tools to use. It's lots of fun to be able to do that. And if we can't find one today, Big Ed in the control room, I don't mind talking to you. I love talking to you. My listeners love you. Do you want to go ahead and play Kevin B. Edwards? Okay, we got it.
Onomatopoeia. What's that? Pizza topping? A language spoken on a planet long ago and far, far away? Something the Three Stooges used as a punchline? Wrong, wrong, wrong. I'm Jim Lamb. Let's get started. Buzzes. Hisses. Clang. Bang. Sizzle. Great words all, but less than they seem. Why? Because they're words that don't stand for what they are. They phonetically imitate what they describe. For example, when I said buzz, you probably thought of a bumblebee or a front door buzzer. When I said hiss, a snake may have come to mind, or maybe a leaky tire. Clang, a bell. Bang, a gun. And sizzle, a big juicy steak. But it's not just things that make sounds. How about animals? The cow goes moo, the pig goes oink, the duck goes quack. Guess what my favorite sound is? If you said you are right. Some of my favorite word imitations are in The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. While I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. Can you hear it? Tap, tap, tap. Rap, rap, rap. I did. So the next time you write about a clock, make it talk by saying tick-tock. That would be a great way to make your story more dynamic, dramatic, and engaging. Me, wow. I'm Jim Lamb, and that's a little something-something about onomatopoeia.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Thank you very much for that one, because that's a great, I love that one. Now, I want to play on the way out today, I want to play a song sung by Kevin B. Edwards. He is the author of Kevin Turns Fear into Feet. And I love his voice. The first time I heard it, I just was so amazed. Now he is an international gospel singer, and he's traveling all over the place and singing. And I want to play this song because it touches your heart. And at this time of the year, we want to find goodness. And so we're going to play Kevin B. Edwards, Be My Good, and find the good in you and find the good in other people.
Sometimes I feel like giving up and throwing in the towel. Sometimes I can't hardly face another day. Assured that God will see me through. It's working for my good. It's working for my good. Sometimes the clouds hang low. I can't even see my way. I ask the question, when things will ever change for me. I am assured. my good. It's working for my good. For my good. For my good. I can see clearly now. It's working for this world.